Hey, sit down listeners. You can find us every Wednesday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
Welcome to The Sit Down, a mafia history podcast. Here's your host, Jeff Nadeau.
What's up, everybody, and welcome in to another edition of The Sit Down, a mafia history podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Nadeau. As always, it is Wednesday, and it is time for another show, another sit down. Got a great one planned for you today. Hope you're all having a great morning, day, wherever it is, and wherever you are. Back at it and better than never. My co-host, Blackjack Fudger, joins me. Blackjack, how you doing? What's going on? How you been?
I'm doing great, brother. It's good to be back. We got a show today that should be an entertaining one. We got a topic that's one of the more colorful characters out there.
It should be crazy. but we're back. Got a little mob news I want to get to, and then we will get to Crazy Joe Gallo. I got a lot of requests for. I'd probably gotten like 50 requests over the time we've done this show about Joe Gallo. People want to talk Joey Gallo, and we're going to really get into a lot of things that, you know, Joe Gallo was really a, when we look back on the mafia, he was really pretty much involved in a lot of crazy times. Obviously the early Colombo Wars. We're going to dispel a rumor that Joe Gallo was a part of the Albert Anastasia. It's just not factual. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about what exactly happened to Joe Colombo. Was Joey Gallo behind it? I'm in belief that he wasn't. I'll tell you what I think really happened. And we'll talk about his end, his life. I think there's obviously been a lot on the green screen that if we watch films, obviously we've seen The Irishman. One of the big points of contention about the film that people didn't like was there was belief that Frank Sheeran killed Joey Gallo. And that's just not factual. Joey Gallo was killed. We all know that at Umberto's, and we'll talk about that. But we'll talk about the individual that actually shot him. Lot to talk about, lot to get to. But before we do that, I want to first tell you to give us a follow on Twitter at the Sit Down 7. We continue to build our Twitter account up over 7,000 followers. We appreciate you all. I always get compliments about the random little facts that I put out and or things that we're doing. So give us a follow on Twitter to keep up with the show. And I also, you know, Blackjack, one of the things I'm most proud of that I've done with this show and we've done with this show is not only we built this show to what it is, but I also have built a pretty successful YouTube channel that I'm pretty happy with. And we continue to fly up. I'm getting close to 3,000 subscribers and, you know, I've done some really cool interviews, some cool, you know, videos and things of that nature. So go give us a follow on YouTube, The Sit Down. You can find it, The Sit Down, a Mafia History Podcast. We do a little bit of different things that we don't do here on the show. So make sure you check that out as well. Blackjack, I also have a pretty cool announcement. We are closing in on 1 million total listens on this show. So we're going to have to do something special for that.
Yeah. I mean, that's a crazy number. I mean, when you sit back and think about how many podcasts are out there and, you know, that we're doing this on our own, you know, sitting here, putting this thing together, putting it out, a million downloads is a crazy number. I don't know that we thought we'd get there when we started this a few months ago, but man, thank you to everyone who listens to this show. It's, you know, we wouldn't still be doing this without you guys.
Yeah, and I know we kind of sound like a broken record every week thanking people, but you know, it truly has been special doing this. I mean, I as I've said many times, we started this show really just because we had a passion for it. We like talking about mob stuff. I know him and I, Blackjack, we used to, you know, we just talk on the phone about it and just kind of what's going on. And You know, it's nice that this has taken off, and I think the sky's the limit for it, and we'll see where we are 6 months or a year from now. But thanks, as always, to the listeners. So a little bit of mob news, Blackjack. It was reported yesterday that a very maligned former boss of the Philadelphia Crime Family, Ralph Natale, passed away at the age of 87. No love lost, mostly between the mafia and Ralph Natale. Ralph has since, in his twilight years, become a bit of a poster child on YouTube. A lot of people have gotten a kick out of his constant lies about who he was in the life. But just a piece of mob news, Ralph Natale passes away. A lot of people remember Ralph as being a front boss for a skinny Joey Merlino at one point, ended up cooperating for very little. But Ralph Natale has been seen on some documentaries and even did an interview with Patrick Bet-David, which was a bizarre interview. He actually, at one point, got into a shouting match with Bet-David over questions that he asked. It really seemed like a stubborn old man. And, you know, he was old. It was probably getting close to him. But we remember Ralph Natale. So sad Ralph Natale has passed away. And there's also been a little bit of other mob news, Blackjack, and I let you know about this. According to the family of Sammy Gravano, he has coronavirus. And from what I understand, he is not doing real well with it. Obviously, we don't know what's going to happen to Sammy. The truth is, he is old. He's 76 years old. He does have Graves' condition, Graves' disease, as far as I know. We'll see if Sammy makes it through. But from what I understand, he is not doing real well. We'll see what happens. But just a little bit of mob news as we start out episode, 42 of the Sit Down. I had a great episode last week on John Vesey and the Philly mob. But Blackjack, what do you say we get in to Joey Gallo? What my first thought and word to describe Joey Gallo is this. Joey Gallo was a renegade. And we've seen this before in the mafia. We've talked about these guys that, you know, Joey Gallo was always around things. He was always apart. He was always kicking up dust with people around him. And by the end of it, Joey Gallo had worn out his welcome in the mob. And at some point, the mob wasn't going to put up with it anymore. And they got rid of him. We liken the same individual in Joey Gallo to people like Carmine Galanti, to yep. Mad Stam DeStefano. These people that do not play ball and want to go off on the deep end and do their own thing, they get taken out with the trash.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we've talked about this over and over with, you know, you hit it on the head, guys like Galanti and DeStefano. You know, there are rules, right? There is a set of rules to being part of organized crime in this country. And the guys who just, you know, turn their nose up at them don't last very long. And, you know, Joey Gallo is the perfect example of that, because for a guy who is as colorful a guy as he was, and was involved in so much stuff that we're going to get into here in just a minute, he only lived 43 years. I mean, he died at the age of 43, you know, because of how unreliable he was. I mean, that's the bottom line. If you're not going to follow the rules, you can't be a dependable guy in that life.
Right. And, you know, a lot of the time, you know, you can stick your nose up at the mob, you can do what you do, but at the end of the day, they're going to get you when you don't expect it. That's how it works. Let's get into it. Joe Gallo on the sit down. Joseph Gallo was born April 7th, 1929 in Red Hook, Brooklyn. We've talked about Red Hook a little bit, obviously in that part of Brooklyn near the Gowanus Canal. You know, at the time that Joey Gallo was born, it was obviously in the middle of the Great Depression, or right before it really. The country was, you know, by Joe's 6 month birthday, it was a messy time in America. The Depression had happened, and Joe's father and mother were just struggling to keep food on the table and help, you know, him and his brothers. Joe's father, Umberto, was actually very connected to the life. It was said that as a young child, Umberto Gallo was a bootlegger. He was moving all sorts of whiskey and rum of sorts up and down the Brooklyn Navy Yard. Obviously, look, in the Italian neighborhoods of New York during Prohibition, it was a great time to be alive. There was money everywhere. And Joey Gallo's father really kind of likened himself to a gangster. He was pretty much right close to it. During Joey's youth, he had blonde curly hair. And there was a story one time where Joey became sick of his hair and actually cut it off. He didn't like to be called Joe the Blonde, which people would call him occasionally. And, you know, he grew up like any other Italian kid did in Red Hook and other neighborhoods. We know Red Hook from being the area where, you know, if you look at kind of the geography of New York, Red Hook is an area that obviously has changed a lot. It faces right, you know, on the river, kind of overlooking Governor's Island and the Statue of Liberty. But it's in what? Basically right below Carroll Gardens, which is where Carmen Persico is from. And as we know, with the Gallows coming up, they were close to Carmen Persico. They knew who he was. They were close. They knew each other. But just like any other kid, Joey Gallo grew up in poverty. That's kind of how it was to be young and Italian in New York. It was just part of how things were. As a teen, Joey began kind of running around in the streets. You know, it was very close and easy for a kid with multiple brothers like the Gallows to be illusioned into the life of crime. He was actually, a lot of gangsters were inspired by Albert Anastasia, who had kind of come from that area, and Albert was making his way up the line as a gangster. And a lot of the gangsters in that neighborhood looked up to Albert Anastasia as he came up. You know, he was from, right near there, right in that neighborhood. So as coming up, Joey Gallo and his brothers start running the streets. They're involved with gangs. They catch the eye of an individual called Frank Abatamarco. Abatamarco, we've talked about. He was kind of the mentor to a lot of these young kids in Red Hook. He was one of the leaders of the mob in Red Hook. And he kind of took to teaching these kids about the life of the streets. It's important to realize, though, Blackjack, Umberto Gallo, Joe's father, actually instilled a lot in his sons. He wanted his kids to really take the life. He groomed them to be gangsters. And Joey and his brothers would talk about that. His father was half a wise guy himself, and he really kind of groomed them to be gangsters, which is, you know, a little different. I mean, occasionally you'll deal with a gangster that his father, like, you know, Anthony Casso, for instance, father was in the mafia. But, you know, it's usually they're generally trying to keep them out of that life, or, you know, occasionally they go in. But at the end of the day, Joey Gallo was really groomed from a young age with Frankie Schatz and his father to be a gangster.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look back at it, it makes some sense, right? Like, Umberto Gallo was, you know, had a baby in Joe Gallo. The Great Depression hits right away. I mean, that was as bad a time as this country has ever seen, obviously. And what does he do to provide for his family? He takes up bootlegging, which, as we've talked about numerous times on the show, was very profitable, right? You could make good money being a bootlegger during Prohibition. And as you said, Umberto Gallo wasn't all the way in. He was kind of half a gangster. I think that's a great way to describe it. So I think that when that's the lifestyle that you grow up with, and you see, like, you can go one of two ways. You can either fall into this pit during the Great Depression and you're surrounded by poverty, or there's an alternative and you can start to put money in your pockets and food on the table. I think that there's a natural kind of push that, hey, listen, you know, life is short, go get yours.
Yeah. And Joey Gallo, as a teen, him and his brothers realized that, you know, working for the local Profaci crime family, they could, you know, kind of, you know, beat people up, get money from them, and kind of, you know, earn in the mafia as young teenagers. Joey had a rage in him. He wasn't a big kid by any means, but he had that glazed look in his eye, that ability to, you know, beat your fucking skull in if he needed to. And, you know, Joey Gallo would talk about, as a teenager, he went and saw a film called Kiss of Death. It came out in 1946. It started an individual that he was fond of. And there was a character called Tommy Udo in that film. And Tommy Udo kind of looked like Joey Gallo. He was a villain, a sadistic, psychopathic murderer. And Joey kind of patterned his life off of Tommy Udo, this kind of an antagonist in that film. And he was a psychopath. And it's weird because Joey would ultimately dress like him and start to kind of really act like him. By 1946, Joey Gallo was actually in the military, but he would be discharged from the Navy after he was found to have a nervous disorder, which back then was code word for you were nuts. By 1950, Joey's 21 years old, and he's diagnosed with schizophrenia after he gets charged with burglary. They send him to a mental hospital, and he was actually diagnosed with schizophrenia. Joey Gallo was someone that you know, I think if he had grown up, you know, 30 or 40 years later, he'd have been committed. Surely he'd have been eating green Jell-O. But Joey Gallo was a psychopath lunatic that patterned his behavior off of a murderous psychopath on the big screen. Who's to say, Blackjack, films don't guide young children to do things they shouldn't do. Tommy Udo definitely did that for Joey Gallo. So Joey Gallo was crazy, but he was perfect for the mafia. He was willing to hurt people, but he was willing to earn. And he had this tinge of, I want to be a leader in me. I'm never going to listen to people above me. I do what I want, and you're just going to get in line. And Joey, as I said, was very much a renegade. In the 50s, Joey and his brothers would be kind of part of the enforcement wing of the Profaci crime family. As I said, he came up under Frankie Schatz, Abata Marco, and Abata Marco had his own crew. So for Joey and his brothers, it was helpful to them to kind of work under Frankie Schatz. They could learn the life, and they could also be called on to kill people and to hurt people if they needed to. As we know, in 1957, one of the biggest hits in mafia history would go down. There's a lot of things that go into Albert Anastasia, but I'll kind of just, and we'll do a show on him at some point, but the truth of the matter was Albert Anastasia was going behind people's backs. He was trying to muscle in on Cuba. He had a gambling problem. He was out of control. He was kind of thumbing his nose up at other families. And it was pretty clear at that point, Vito Genovese and Carla Gambino, who was coming up in the Gambino family, wanted him out of the way. Gambino wanted to take over. He knew that, you know, at the time of his death, I mean, Albert Anastasia was 55, Blackjack. You know, Carla Gambino was never going to lead. He was going to have to take out Anastasia to take care of becoming boss. It just wasn't going to happen. He was likely not going to outlive Albert Anastasia. And, you know, this was a good time because as Carlo realized, you know, Anastasia had all sorts of problems. I mean, at the time of his death, Albert Anastasia defaulted on his mortgage. I mean, he was a big time gambler. He had major problems at horse tracks. He was a degenerate gambler. He owed people. There was also rumors that one of his main people was basically accepting money to be accepted into the family. He was selling buttons. And there's just a lot going on with Albert Anastasia. Now, I bring up Albert Anastasia because there's a rumor in Cosa Nostra history, and most documentaries and TV will lend you to believe that on the day of October 25th, 1957, Albert Anastasia goes into the Park Sheraton Hotel to get his weekly, grooming done.
Yep.
Two gunmen burst in. They shoot Albert Anastasia, which obviously happens. But there's a lot of question to who actually killed Albert Anastasia. Now, most documentaries would lend you to believe that it was Joey Gallo and Carmine the Snake Persico. However, there's become more and more realization that it likely had nothing to do with Gallo and Persico. They both would take credit for it. But the truth is the witnesses to the crime would describe the killers as in their 40s and more stocky. And at the time, Joey Gallo was not in his 40s. He was in his late 20s. And so was Persico. They didn't match the description. And it would actually come to fruition that it was likely people in the Gambino crime family that took care of the hit, an individual called Stephen Grimalta, who was scheduled to kind of take part in it through Joe Pontiarmone, who would be a longtime Gambino member. We saw him in the Gotti film. But there's reason to believe, Blackjack, that Joey Gallo, while people believe he was involved with the Albert Anastasia, it's probably not factual. He just didn't match the description physically or from an age standpoint.
He doesn't match the description. You're right. The age is way off. He was 28 years old. And Joe Gallo, I'm not going to say he was a baby face, but even in his 40s, didn't look like he was
good
in
point.
His 40s.
Good point.
So at 28, there's no way you're mistaking him for a 40-year-old man. And again, it goes back to what you said, Jeff. This, to me, always was a Carlo Gambino hit, right? Like Carlo Gambino was 2 years younger than Albert Anastasia. I mean, he wasn't ever going to get a chance to run this thing unless he took him out. Anastasia had worn out his welcome all over town. And there's no reason why Gambino would have used Joe Gallo for this. I mean, it just, there's no logical connection there that Gambino would have used Gallo for this hit.
No, it wouldn't make real sense, would it? I mean, why would you go outside of the family and contract two young guys? Keep in mind, at the point of Albert Anastasia's death, Stephen Grimalta, a.k.a. Stevie Coogan, was 40 years old, okay, which makes sense. He was the real gunman, him and another individual, Joe Pontiarmone's brother, as far as I know. That makes a whole lot more sense. He was a stocky individual. Yep. You know, it's interesting because Stevie Coogan would actually go on to be, you know, a longstanding member of the Gambino family. He was very close with Joe Armone and would end up being on the, you know, ruling panel that would involve John Jr. at one point. So, you know, Coogan Grimalta ended up living very long. He was never actually convicted of this and would die in 2016. But yeah, the truth is Joey Gallo, while he took credit for it, Carmen Persico would as well. At one point, Carmen Persico made a point in a letter to a journalist that, quote, that fag Joe Gallo took credit for it, which those were his words, not mine. But he referred to Joey Gallo as a homosexual, which, as we know, was not true. But they both would take credit for it, right? So, you know, that's kind of one of the big wives' tales about Joey Gallo. It's just not factual. But by 1959... the Profaci crime family was becoming a little severed. As we talked about in the Persico episode, people were becoming disillusioned with Joe Profaci. Joe Profaci was an old man. He was greedy. He was a huckster. He was a old school guy. And it really takes us back to the Maranzano Masseria days where these old mustache Petes were in control. And, you know, this guy was, you know, grabbing every piece of money he could get. There was an old tale that Joe Profaci by the late 50s was actually taking obviously his cut from every racket, but he was also blackjack actually charging each member of the Profaci crime family $25 a month to like be a part of the Profaci family. So he was just greedy. And at the end of the day, there was some severing going on and disillusion with Profaci. So by this point, Joey Gallo and his brothers are becoming pretty much earners. I mean, they're making money, they're enforcing. Joey Gallo had many lucrative businesses, including a vending and jukebox business. And what they would do is they would just kind of install jukeboxes at different places. And if you didn't want the jukebox, you basically took the jukebox. They would threaten you and say, you're going to take our fucking jukebox. It's that simple. Joey Gallo, interestingly enough, would actually be called in front of the Senate committee in 1959. And they were actually probing into some of the lucrative businesses they thought the mafia was involved in. And one of the issues, Blackjack, was vending. And they went to the vending business and said, we're going to call Joey Gallo. We want to talk to this guy. And I've heard before have you ever seen the picture of Joey Gallo in front of the Senate committee?
Yeah.
He's got the black sunglasses on, the black suit. And it's actually in The Irishman, they show this scene. Joey Gallo walks in and RFK's sitting there and JFK's sitting there. And Joey Gallo sits down and basically, you know, starts just going off about this and about that. He starts smoking a cigarette. Yeah. It was just quite a performance, wasn't it?
It's a bizarre thing. You really, if you just Google Joe Gallo, U.S. Senate, you'll see the pictures we're talking about. You will think you're looking at pictures out of a movie, and it's not. It's real life. This guy showed up black on black, sunglasses, and a cigarette in his mouth in front of the U.S. Senate.
And there was also rumors that Joey Gallo was attempting to like have sex with the secretary of Robert Kennedy. And he had made a comment about the carpet in Kennedy's office that it'd be great for craps. Yeah, just all sorts of funny shit. And, you know, this is where I think this was actually streamed like on, you know, this was out on closed circuit TV and things like that. And people started to understand kind of who Joey Gallo was. And I mean, when you look at that picture of Joe Gallo, like he looked straight out of Central Casting, the slick back hair, the sunglasses, the suit, just he looked like a mobster. And, you know, he put himself on the purview of law enforcement by November 4th. 1959, some things would start to happen. Frankie Shotza Bottamarca, who was the mentor to the Gallo brothers, would actually be gunned down as he left a tavern in Brooklyn. And that was found out that Joey Gallo actually went behind the back of Bottamarca and was told that if Bottamarca would be killed, he would get their rackets, Bademarco's rackets. Now, as usual, greedy Joe Profaci says, fuck you, Joey Gallo. I'm not getting anything. I'm not giving you anything. And he reneges on the deal. This was Joey Profaci's problem. He was obsessive and he was constantly reneging on deals. He was being a shithead. Yep. And this is when the Gallo-Profaci war starts. It was time to go. Joe Profaci's greed and arrogance was out of control. And I mean, Blackjack, you can't knock Joey Gallo for doing what he did. I mean, Joe Profaci really, I think, signed his own kind of war certificate that, you know, Joey Gallo is not one to fuck with. And you can't just renege and expect people to fall in line and just do what they're told. What Joe Profaci did was fucked. I mean, yeah, he was a prick.
I mean, listen, you and I know this, Jeff, from talking for 42 episodes here. The fastest way to tear apart an organized crime family is greed, right? Yeah. I mean, you simply cannot be that greedy. There's enough to go around for everyone if you do this thing right. And when you start to squeeze people, they start to, and it's a logical train of thought, right? It's, I'm the one taking the risk. I'm the one on the street. I'm the one earning this money, and you're taking all of it. Like, why are we going to continue to do this? It is inevitably going to lead to conflict. And that's what happened with the Profacis.
Yeah. So the war ensues, and the early 60s are dealing with Joey Gallo, who starts kind of kidnapping people. He says, you know what? Fuck them. We're just going to start taking their people. Joey Gallo starts kidnapping the big wigs around Profaci, including Joe Magliacco, the underboss. He would also kidnap Joe Colombo, who was a capo regime, and the brother of Joe Profaci, Frank. They would all be held up. And Joe Profaci actually found a way out of it. He would fly to Florida to get away and to escape. But, you know, he was really making waves, Joey Gallo. And he wanted money and rackets in return. He wanted some respect. Now, through Sonny Franzese and an individual called Charlie Lo Cicero, who was the consigliere of the family, they would actually exhume a little bit of peace talks that were made. Joe Profaci basically comes out of hiding and says, okay. I'm interested. Let's put this to bed. Let's give you guys some rackets. Let's make peace. It wouldn't last long, though. Joe Profaci, as usual, reneges again and orders Larry Gallo and a member of the Gallo crew, Joe Gioeli, to be killed. And again, goes back on his deal. And again, this is the same issue with Joe Profaci, just this constant going back on things. And this is when the Colombo family kind of goes to war. And Joe Gallo would call it going to the mattresses. And there's a lot of reason for belief that that's where the phrase would come from in mob circles. Joe and his crew would hold up at 51 President Street and do what they had to do. The problem was they were bleeding money. They had no money. It was almost, Blackjack, similar to, if we look at recent news, okay, this is similar almost to, let's say Ukraine was on their own and they went to war with Russia. That's kind of how the Profaci-Colombo War was. It was Profaci, this big group, against Joey Gallo with a couple of guys and very little money. And, you know, they weren't going to win. But Joey Gallo fought anyway. Throughout all this, the war goes on. They're away from their families for a long period of time. They're truly at war. I mean, you can't leave your house. You're worried about gunmen. Larry Gallo, one of Joe's brothers, decides he needs money. He's going to let his guard down a little bit. He gets told that there's a money-making opportunity through Carmen Persico, who he had thought was a friend of his. He goes to the Sahara Lounge in Flatbush, Brooklyn. And upon arrival, Carmen Persico, Sally D'Ambrosio, a Colombo hitman, an individual called Alphonse Cirillo, and others managed to try to strangle him to death with a garrote. We've talked about this in the Persico episode. So basically, Carmen the Snake earns his nickname, basically fucks the Gallos and goes against them and tries to kill Larry Gallo. Luckily for Larry Gallo, a police officer hears this and runs in, and Joey Gallo's brother Larry manages to escape. Now, in typical Cosa Nostra ways, Larry Gallo says nothing and does nothing. So it worked out. but it didn't work out. It didn't work out for the Persico faction. And that happened on August 20th, 1961. Luckily for Joey Gallo, Joe Profaci would ultimately die in 1962. So the main rival of Joey Gallo would actually die. So he would kind of be away from it, but he would still have to deal with a war. I mean, Joe Migliaccio was not going to forget that he was kidnapped, and he was still going to maintain that the Gallos were shit. But, you know, in a way, Blackjack, we could say Joey Gallo won the Profaci part of the war.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can definitely say that. I mean, he outlasted them for sure. You know, and as you said, Jeff, it was an uphill battle. I mean, especially when Persico turns on them, right? I mean, they thought they had a pretty strong ally in Carmine Persico, and then he turns on them and sides with the Profacis. You know, at that point, you've got to really be wondering, is this winnable? But ultimately, they outlasted the Profacis, and, you know, things turned.
Yeah, the problem was by late 61, though, Joey Gallo was experiencing multiple issues. Obviously, he was dealing with the Profaci crap, but he was also dealing with the federal government. An individual that he was dealing with, Teddy Moss. Teddy Moss was a business owner. He owned clubs and check cashing stores, things of that nature. Joey Gallo was still very much involved with loan sharking, extortion, typical mob rackets. He starts really shaking down Teddy Moss. Teddy Moss is having guns pulled on him. Joey Gallo's really trying to get tough with him. Teddy Moss decides, I'm not dealing with it anymore, and goes to the FBI. They would ultimately bring Joey in, and he would be found guilty of extortion and conspiracy in state court and would get 7 to 14 years upstate. So, you know, for Joey Gallo, he ultimately wouldn't win because he would end up going to prison. Luckily, his brothers would stay out. And by that point, Joey Gallo gets a prison term, and Joe Migliaccio says, okay, you know what? Obviously, your leader's out. I'm not going to make you all walk on eggshells. I'm going to give you all peace and do what the hell you want. Just keep burning. So Joe Gallo, Blackjack, goes to the slammer for the first time.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you know, 7 to 14 years is not a light sentence for his first time in there. So, you know, he's got a little bit of time to do here. And ultimately, you know, Joe Gallo would go into his time and come out just as crazy as ever.
Yeah, and this is where kind of Joe Gallo's life kind of takes a weird turn. Joey Gallo would ultimately go to Greenhaven, which, you know, is a pretty famous New York prison. He would go to Attica. He would spend time at Auburn as well. But while at Greenhaven, he becomes close with a couple major names, including Matty Madonna, who, I mean, at one point was the Lucchese family boss and is currently serving life in prison. And an individual called Nicky Barnes. Obviously, if you know anything about black drug dealers, Nicky Barnes at one point was one of the kings of heroin in Harlem. Now, Joey Gallo and Nicky Barnes create this connection. He alone makes a connection with Matty Madonna, and this would provide big dividends for Nicky Barnes in the 70s and into the early 80s. Matty Madonna would actually be his chief connect, actually, but Joey Gallo believes that through creating a power shift with Nicky Barnes, they could take over New York. He has all these subordinates, and they can go into business together, and everyone can upgrade, and everybody can do what they have to do, and everybody will be happy. It'll be like the United Nations, if you will. And Joey Gallo believed that. He believed that going out on the street with a bunch of muscle behind him, including black drug dealers, he would be on the top of the world. But as we know, Black in Cosa Nostra circles in the 60s, this was not looked upon favorably at all.
No, I mean, for multiple reasons. Obviously, at that time, Cosa Nostra was very much against drug dealing. And the relationship with African Americans was less than harmonious at that point. So for multiple reasons, what Joe Gallo was trying to do was never going to happen.
You keep in mind that Joey Gallo is a weird guy because, like, he also, though, would sue the Department of Corrections in New York City in 1964, stating that guards inflicted cruel and unusual punishment on him after he allowed a black barber to cut his hair. So as we know, you know, Joey Gallo, this is the racial stuff. Like, black barbers shouldn't, they assume, be cutting white heads. So, you know, this is where Joey Gallo, it was kind of a weird guy. Like, he was willing to go and sue people. And he's just an odd guy. A prison would characterize Joey Gallo as a belligerent inmate and an agitator. Definitely seems realistic. Now, once Joey Gallo gets transferred, they kind of break up him and Nicky Barnes. They kind of agree, hey, we'll see each other on the outside. Joey Gallo goes up to Auburn, which is up in far northern New York, and takes up all these different hobbies. He starts reading and painting and woodworking and all sorts of stuff. And he becomes this like hippie kind of, and this would kind of be a weird thing. An individual that did time with Joey Gallo would describe him as an articulate and had excellent verbal skills, being able to describe gouging a man's guts out with the same eloquent ease that he used when discussing literature. So there you go. Joey Gallo was creating some surroundings outside the mafia, and who'd have thought Joey Gallo was like Socrates, Blackjack.
A weird guy, for sure. I mean, you know, you talk about him painting and reading classical literature and then, you know, describing gouging a guy's guts out. He's, I mean, I guess on some level, he's a Renaissance man, right? He's a guy of many interests.
Yeah, and, you know, that's not exactly random. I've heard of that before. I mean, Anthony Tony Ducks Carallo loved gardening and classical music. So, I mean, it's not out of the question. Keep in mind, during his prison stay, his brother Larry would actually die of cancer, and I'm sure that hit Joey Gallo hard. As I said, during all this, Joe Profaci dies. Everybody's happy. The Colombo crime family kind of moves on. And during this, though, Magliaccio is someone that resigns after some stuff happens with him. And the commission obviously bring Joe Colombo in as the new boss. And he was someone that was close with Carlo Gambino. They had the they each had respect for each other. And this all happens while Joey Gallo's in jail. Joey Gallo would ultimately be released in April of 1971. And he would come out and just kind of head right back to the street. But one of the things that Joey Gallo started doing is he took this weird behavior and took it into the street. He started hanging out in bookstores and going to like peace parades and things like that. He started hanging out with the elite of New York. He actually started palling around with Jerry Orbach, who would ultimately be in
Law and Order.
But there was a film that came out called The Gang That Couldn't Shoot Straight. And a lot of people believe that Orbach's character, Sal Palumbo, was Joey Gallo. It was a loosely based story on Gallo, and Joey Gallo was gallivanting around and doing what he did. He was getting back to his rackets, but he'd really become an odd character. But he was always kind of an odd character. This was a diagnosed schizophrenic, if we remember, but it seemed like Joey Gallo's prison stay really made him a lot different, didn't it?
It does. I mean, I think you went from a guy who was, you know, unhinged clearly, but was, you know, operating within the bounds of the structure around him to a guy who was now just totally out on his own doing his own thing. And it feels like when he came out of prison, he came out as a guy who was just a one-man gang at this point. Because, I mean, you listen to the things that he says, you know, about the peace agreement that was negotiated. Well, it doesn't apply to me because I was in prison. Well, that's kind of a crazy way to look at it.
Yeah, and Joey Gallo starts kind of acting stupid. Like, Joey Gallo comes out and says, you know what, fuck you, Joe Colombo. That peace agreement doesn't, you know, that admonishes, not doesn't admonish me. I want $100,000 and I'll go away. And Colombo basically says, no, here's $1,000, fuck off. Now, it's important to realize, I know that this is another thing that a lot of people believe. I think we'll ultimately never know, but a lot of people believe this. Joey Gallo would ultimately, as we know, be connected to black gangsters. And around this time, he had a beef with Joe Colombo. Look, we know on June 28, 1971, Joe Colombo is killed at a rally he had for his pro-Italian democracy group. Now, a lot of people believe Joey Gallo sent the individual Jerome Johnson to kill Colombo for him. Now, I know a lot of people feel like that makes sense, but I have a different theory on what happened here. Because if you look into Jerome Johnson, he had no connection to Joey Gallo. There was no visible connection. There was no connection behind the scenes. But as we know, Joe Colombo during the early 70s was out of control. This Italian league he had was bringing a lot of attention to the mob. And one thing we know about people like Carlo Gambino was capo di tutti capi, and he was not going to put up with unwanted attention. And while he at one point liked Joe Colombo, this constant attention was costing people money. It was making things difficult. And if you look into Jerome Johnson, the individual that ultimately would shoot Colombo, if you remember that day, this individual, Jerome Johnson, had a camera. He was there with an unidentified woman. He drops the camera and starts shooting Joe Colombo. Now, when we look into the background of Jerome Johnson, which I did and I found, Jerome Johnson was actually a gay individual, and he frequented a bar owned by Gambino associate called Paul DiBella. Now, I made the connection with DiBella to the higher end of the Gambino family, and it's possible that Carlo Gambino basically went to his people and said, listen, we need Joey Gallo dead, or we need Colombo dead. Let's make it look like Joey Gallo did it, because we know he hangs around with blacks. This would kind of push back on him, and it will give us an insulation. And there was a connection with the Gambino family with this Jerome Johnson. Now, there is also a theory that Jerome Johnson, and it was clear, if you look into his past, he was a lunatic. It was said that he idolized Hitler. He hated women. He wanted to be this, you know, famous guy. And this maybe put him on the map, kind of these crazed gunmen. You know what I'm saying? Like, black chick, like school shooters want to be noticed, basically. Yep. Jerome Johnson was that way. He was always telling people he was going to be famous someday. And there's a theory that he was just some psycho that killed Joe Colombo. But I believe to this day, Carlo Gambino was involved here. He was able to insulate himself from this because, again, Joey Gallo and him had problems, and Joey Gallo was palling around with blacks at the time.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's not a stretch to imagine Gallo being set up for this, and it's not a stretch for the Colombos to assume that Gallo was behind it, because, as you said, at that point, you know, it's hard sometimes in 2022 to think about it like this, but back in the 60s and 70s, the relationship between African-American, you know, gangs and Cosa Nostra was none. It was not good. They were not looked upon kindly. And Joe Gallo was friendly with them. So the logical inference is, if a black guy killed Joe Colombo, well, Joe Gallo had something to do with it, especially considering, you know, the encounter that they had not long before that, you know, with him asking for the $100,000 and Colombo telling him, essentially, go fuck yourself. It makes a lot of sense that would be the conclusion that was drawn. But as you said, it just doesn't hold up. And even the cops, who, I mean, I'm sure the cops would have loved nothing more than to pin this on Joe Gallo, they couldn't do it. They came up and said there's no link between him and Jerome Johnson.
Right. And the problem that Joey Gallo had at this point was he was a bit of a renegade, and he was pretty much on his own at this point. And people like Carmen Persico, who were coming up in the family, were pissed off. Joe, they actually, if you look back on some of the people that were high up in the Colombo family at the time, they were happy with Colombo's leadership. You know, maybe they were a little sick of the gallivanting around at the parades and stuff. But, you know, ultimately they assumed he killed Joey Gallo killed Joe Colombo, that, you know, he had to go himself. So, you know, Joey Gallo's doing his own, you know, socializing with people he shouldn't be, and hang out with movie stars, and, you know, gallivanting around acting like no one can get to him. On April 7th, 1972, remember, April 7th is a big day for Joey Gallo. What is April 7th to Joe Gallo, Blackjack?
April 7th is Joe Gallo's birthday.
Right.
And on October 43rd birthday.
Right. On April 7th, 1972, we'll set the stage. Joey Gallo is celebrating his birthday. His sister's out, his daughter's out, his new wife, Cena, is out, and his bodyguards are there, and everybody's hanging out. They went to the Copacabana and hung out with Jerry Orbach, and they watched Don Rickles perform, and Peter Lemangelo sing, and everything lets out. The club closes around 4 o'clock, and they decide, you know what, let's go have something to eat. At that time, they go to Little Italy. Umberto's is open. Now, remember, if we go back to Maddie the Horse Show, Matty the horse and his family actually owned Umberto's, and Matty was in the building that night.
Yep.
So Joey Gallo goes in, they get two tables, and interestingly enough, Joey Gallo is facing the wall. So he's, the door is behind him. At that point, individuals make a call that, hey, Joey Gallo's here. A lot of people believe Matty the horse is the one that made the call, because how would anybody know? But all in all, two hitters are called on, one of which was an individual called Carmine Sonny Pinto DiBiase. Now, a little bit of background. I actually did a video on Sonny Pinto, and I urge you guys, go check the video out. It's on my YouTube. It's one of the earliest videos I've done, but I know this goofy Irishman movie, which I actually like, but this was a goofy part of it. They would lend you to believe that, you know, Joey Gallo was killed by Frank Sheeran. And I'll tell you why that's bullshit. But so basically, Pinto runs in. He shoots Joey Gallo multiple times. Joey Gallo staggers out onto Mulberry Street and dies on the street. And after the fact, it's important to realize that the wife of Joey Gallo, Sina Gallo, would say that the shooter was Italian looking and small in size and stature. And if you ever have seen Carmine DiBiase, he was a small guy and looked very Italian, had the nose and everything. Frank Sheeran didn't match the description at all. Okay. It just didn't happen. He didn't know Joey Gallo. He didn't kill Joey Gallo. But that was that for Joey Gallo. He died a death that really was thought that he should do. I mean, he was a renegade. He didn't play ball. He was constantly, you know, either trying to kill people that he shouldn't. He was in wars. He wasn't really willing to listen to anyone. He believed he probably should have been boss. He didn't want anyone else to be in control. And he wasn't willing to get in line. Do I ultimately think he killed Joe Colombo? No, I don't. I don't think he set it up. I don't think he had anything to do with it. But his constant widespread need for attention was hurtful.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly was. I mean, you know, we talked about Colombo and his anti-Italian defamation league, which certainly drew a lot of unwanted attention. Joe Gallo was just as bad. I mean, Joe Gallo was all about himself. And ultimately, that's not a way you can survive long term in this life.
Yeah. And, you know, that night, that was that. April 7th, he dies on his birthday. Pretty crazy. So he was born on and died on the same night. You don't see that very often. But that was that for Joe Gallo. When we look back on him, let me ask you, Carmine Persico would ultimately take over control of the family after Joe Colombo.
Yep.
We know, I mean, when we look back at Persico and Gallo, they were both, you know, nuts in their own right. Do you think it was destined that Joey Gallo was probably going to die at early age? I mean, he was just kind of out of control.
Yeah, I mean, he was too eccentric for this life, right? Like the guys who survive in this life long term, the guys who live to old ages, right? They're guys who follow the rules, who go with the flow of things, who, you know, are not, they don't have problems recognizing authority in others. Joe Gallo was the antithesis of every one of those things. You know, he was a guy who wanted more for himself than anyone else. He didn't care who he pissed off. He wasn't going to respect really anyone in charge, no matter who it was. He had a problem with everybody. Ultimately, the guy was just, you know, he was a one-man wolf pack, and that doesn't fly in this lifestyle.
No, it doesn't. And interestingly enough, one of the other individuals that would talk about the night of Joey Gallo's death was Pete Diopoulos, Pete the Greek. He was the bodyguard of Joey Gallo. He would say, quote, "I saw Sonny Pinto wide and dark coming in. I made Pinto right away." Now, keep in mind, he would also mention that he had met Frank Sheeran a few hours earlier, actually at the Copa, and knew exactly what he's looked like. And there was no way that the Greek would have mistaken Sheeran for DiBiase.
I mean, Jeff, it really is. I mean, the Frank Sheeran thing is really kind of silly. Like, I mean, you think about what his wife described. And
like, what's even the connection there?
Listen, I'm not even saying that all eyewitnesses are accurate, because they're not. But she describes guys who were short and appeared to be Italian. Frank Sheer was 6'4", okay? That's a really tall guy today. In the 1970s, that's an even taller guy. Like, you're not – if Frank Sheer walks into a room and you say, hey, this big bastard came in and shot him, like, not three short Italian guys. Like, it's just not true.
Keep in mind, after the murder of Joey Gallo, Carmen DiBiase, and the individual that ordered the hit and kind of put it in motion, Joe Luparelli, would actually go down to Chinatown and have a couple of drinks and some dinner. They would then get rid of the guns they used, and they'd leave New York City and head up to Nyack, where they would kind of go out in the lam a little bit. Ultimately, when we look into DiBiase, he would actually kind of disappear. No one would ever find him again. There was talk that, you know, he had just kind of left and never came back. You know, there was reports that he was kind of on the lam doing what he had to do. He was in the wind. He was involved in some other hits as well that kind of, I think, brought some heat down on him. But ultimately, that was that for Joey Gallo. I think his reputation preceded him. He was always going to die the way he did. He did what he did on his own accord. He was always going to just be his own renegade type of guy. Keep in mind, as we said, his brother, Larry Gallo, died in 1968. Interestingly enough, Albert Gallo is actually still alive. The brother of Joey Gallo, he's still alive. I mean, he's kicking at 91 years old. He actually would end up becoming part of the Genovese crime family and would actually... After he left the family, interestingly enough, a lot of guys, Blackjack, would leave the Colombo family. We know that Sammy Gravano left, Bobby Borriello left at one point. You know, Albert Gallo would leave as well, and he'd actually do quite well in the Genovese crime family. He would be made in 1976 and ended up being a captain at one point. He's very respected, and to this day, he's very respected. How about that? Albert Gallo is still alive.
Yeah, I mean, that's a long life right there. I mean, 91, I'll sign for 91 right now.
Yeah, I would love that as well. Would you do that if God came down and said, Blackjack, you can die at 91, would you be good for that? You want to live that long?
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, me too. Would you want to know when you're going to die? That's kind of random, right?
I don't think so.
I don't either.
I you would obsess about it, I think.
Yeah.
And it would just consume you.
Because what if it was next week?
Yeah, I would, even if it was, you know, 40 years in the future, I don't think I'd want to know, because I think you would just constantly be obsessing about it, you know?
I think that's almost kind of the cool thing about life, though, you know? Like, weirdly enough, like the guy we just talked about, Joey Gallo, I think knew that he wasn't going to last that long. But, you know, for just a regular citizen, it's kind of cool not knowing, because I wouldn't want to know either, but.
No, I think it would just
quit. So, yeah. Listen, Albert, Kid Blast Gal, if you're out there and you want to talk to us, I'd love to speak to you. I'll come off the Red Hook. We can chit chat and sit down. That would be, wouldn't that be an incredible person to talk to?
It absolutely would be.
I mean, could you imagine understanding like what happened during the going to the mattresses? You know, what went on there? You know,
guys got great stories.
Yeah, for sure. But, well, that's the show this week, guys. As always, guys and girls, we appreciate you listening. A fun one today, nonetheless. Crazy Joe Gallo. By the way, let me ask you one thing before we wrap up. I don't know if this is a weird question, but I'm going to ask it. I mean, if let's say you don't know Joey Gallo and you're looking at gangsters, would you agree Joey Gallo is probably one of the better looking gangsters ever? Good looking guy, right?
Yeah, I think he was. That's kind of what I alluded to earlier, that like he had a, you know, he had a really kind of stereotypical, you know, Italian look to him, you know, great head of hair. He had like a square jaw, you know, that Roman nose. I mean, yeah, the guy was he was a good looking guy. That's why I said like the idea that you would confuse him for somebody that was 40 years old when he was 28 is just crazy. It's not. It's just not reality. I mean, at 32, he could pass for 20.
Also, a lot of people didn't like Maniscalco playing him in The Irishman. I thought he was actually good.
I thought he was fine.
I thought he was believable. I'm not a big fan of like comedians playing serious parts, because I think sometimes they try to be too funny, but I thought he did a good job, quite honestly. Yeah. But all right, guys, that's it. As always, thank you for listening. If you enjoy the show, make sure you leave us a review, 5-star rating. We do appreciate that. It's important that everybody give us a good review. Give us a 5. We've done a great show here. Also, go check us out on Twitter at the sitdown7 and go give us a sub on YouTube. I'm trying to build that up. And there's some really great Mafia content over there. If you're enjoying our show, make sure you go check YouTube out because there's even more Mafia content there. Blackjack, another great episode. Where are you at? Where can we find you?
You find me on Twitter at Blackjack Fletcher, betterthanvegas.com. Giving away a lot of free money this week with the Royal Rumble coming up on Saturday. We've got a great show Saturday with Kurt Angle and Summer Rae on it. So make sure you go follow at BTV Bets on Twitter. We're giving away a lot of free money this weekend.
BTV Bets is where you can find it. Blackjack and I are both in the gambling business. By the way, you mentioned Summer Rae, who is actually a good friend of yours.
She is. I worked with her the last year in horse racing. Very, very nice woman and really talented. She's got a lot of different interests in the crypto world, and you know, she's obviously going to be in the Royal Rumble Saturday, so we've got a great interview with her dropping 6 o'clock on Saturday evening for the Rumble preview show.
Blackjack, I have a really good idea, and I want to bend your ear on this before we wrap up. I have an idea for the show. What do you think about this? I want to get Summer Rae on video. And you and I show her gangsters, and she rates them.
She would absolutely be willing to do it.
Like, you want to do that?
Danielle is willing to do just about anything. She's the easiest person to work with. She's great.
Okay. Can we set that up? We'll put it on YouTube. We'll put it out there. I would be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll definitely let her know.
Okay.
I'm sure she'll do it.
Okay, let's do that. That's why you should go subscribe on YouTube, the Sit Down and Mafia History Podcast. Go get that. You'll see the very and I will tell you, I told you this, Blackjack. I'll tell her this. One of the most beautiful women you'll see. Beautiful woman. So we should do that. That would be funny. So, okay. Thanks as always, guys. That's something to look forward to. We'll be back next week with another great episode of the Sit Down. Thanks for listening. We'll see you then.